A bumper crop of movies today on Movie Rollers. We review Skyfall, Flight, and A Late Quartet. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
I'm Yazdi as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Hey, we're all together.
Yay,
in person.
We are together.
In person. We can see each other and reach
live.
Out. Yes.
Yeah. I love it.
I know, we normally do this by Skype for those listening and wondering what on earth we're talking about being together, because hopefully it sounds like we're always together, but...
We are in our hearts
and minds.
So I'm really happy. We have an ArcLight movie theater, which is literally within a mile of our home.
Have you been to
the ArcLight?
I have not. I've looked at it from the outside, but it looks very nice from the outside.
Oh, it's amazing. It's like the ideal compromise between we have these movie theaters here in San Diego, Cinépolis, which are luxury movie theaters. They have like Lazy Boy seats, and you can get alcohol and people serve you
and the best milkshake ever.
But you know, it's like $20 a ticket. It's a premium experience, and it's always been very good. The alternative to that has been kind of the normal standard movie theaters, and they're a variable
and
quality.
Even some substandard ones, to
yeah,
be honest.
I mean,
with
I'm
bad
gonna name
sound.
Names, but there's an AMC right here in La Jolla.
Boo.
Which really does need to be refurbished. Oftentimes the movies in there, they're just too dark, the seating is uncomfortable, it's not stadium, so you know I always end up with a Sasquatch sat in front of me and not able to see the movie. And one of my pet peeves is that they don't have, it seems, quality projectionists. Mm-hmm. They don't often focus the screen correctly, and with 3D they don't often calibrate it correctly. So I'm getting really fussy about seeing movies not as the director had intended. And ArcLight actually prides themselves on setting things up ahead of time. They show the movies at the correct brightness. Rashmi, I think you read somewhere that they actually interview or they discuss with the director about the, mm-hmm. the
yeah,
movie.
I think it was a discussion we were having, and yes. Someone actually said that they have a sheet of paper that they go through with each director to say, how do you want this shown, which is absolutely incredible.
So, and it lived up to its hype. I mean, we saw Skyfall there, and you know, the picture quality was great. They charge, if you remember, like $12.50 for a ticket. And to me, it's worth the extra couple bucks over an AMC seat any day of the week. I mean, it's beautiful.
And is it very limited seating, so you can only do it with reservations, or you can show up there and buy a ticket?
I think you can show up, but one of the nice things is you can also book your ticket. It's stadium seating, so there aren't any really bad seats in the house.
I mean, even the ones on the front row look reasonable. I mean, I don't think I'd want to sit on that front row, but
for me,
certainly
I like
they're not pants.
I like the idea that you can book your seat mm-hmm. ahead of time, because you know, A, when you get to the theater at the last minute for a popular movie, you might end up in a seat that you might not ordinarily pick, which sucks.
I should say, there were four of us who went to see Skyfall. We all had to sit separately, even though we arrived half an hour before the show began.
Really?
Half an hour before, and it was all full.
Wow.
Which was ridiculous. Four of us had to sit separately.
But we did think about you, Yazdi, because there is one rule, which is that they won't let you in. If you're late, so...
I'm never late to a movie.
I know.
I'm late for everything else, but never
true.
For a movie.
This is true.
Why can't your meetings be like movies?
I know, then I'd be on time.
But no, right. It's actually really good, and I'm super excited. We saw our first movie there, and really I can't see us going anywhere else if given the choice moving forward. So ArcLight Cinemas, we love you. Thank you for coming to town.
And talking of Skyfall...
Talking of Skyfall, that's the one we want to do first. Okay. Yazdi, why don't you introduce Skyfall for us?
Contain your excitement, folks. Skyfall is the latest Bond film released on the occasion of the 50th year of the franchise. Daniel Craig plays his third bow as James Bond after Casino Royale and A Quantum of Solace. This time, the Bond story sticks pretty close to home as M, who's always been played by Judi Dench, finds herself at crossroads with the British intelligence and the British government that finds the MI6 operative outdated and irrelevant. Bond himself begins to question his loyalties to M, as does another one of her protégés who has now gone to seed. played by Javier Bardem as the bad guy, Silva is out to exact revenge from all things MI6. This time around, the action shifts from Turkey to China to Macau to finally back to London and then ends in Scotland. The film is directed by Sam Mendes of American Beauty fame and also stars Ralph Fiennes, Albert Finney, Naomi Harris, and Ben Whishaw. What do you guys think?
So close your eyes and forget that Quantum of Solace ever existed, because this is Bond at its best. Sam Mendes, thank you very, very much. Great story, good action, and another great rendition of The Man in the Tux by Daniel Craig. I really enjoyed this movie, so much so that I went to watch it twice.
And I knew you were going to like it because you did come to see it with me. Rashmi caught the screening, the advanced screening with the rest of the reviewing critics, but I couldn't make that one. So when Rashmi said, I'll go see it with you again, I was like, I think I'm in for a treat here. And I think that little bit of expectation was a little bit of a downside for me. I thought this movie was competent, but really, I don't know what all the fuss is about. This is running 94% on Rotten Tomatoes. Yes, it's a good Bond movie, but for me, it lacked in overall plot and adventure. I kept feeling like I was waiting for the movie to start. And that's not to say the movie wasn't enjoyable, because it was. It just wasn't one of the great Bond movies for me.
Yeah, I'm more Joe than Rashmi. I think the movie is uncommonly well made and is consistently entertaining. But actually, the biggest problem I had was with its tone. And, you know, why so somber, Mr. Bond? I mean, it appears that the Bond franchise is a serious case of the downs. And it can't seem to shake it off. For three films in a row now, starting with Casino Royale, we have this conflicted, aching, hurting Bond, you know, who's unbearably weighed down by his past and the ails of the contemporary world. We get it. It was okay the first time around. It was bearable the second time around. The third time around, you know, just crack a smile already. First Batman.
Yeah.
First Batman and now Bond. You know, can we have some fun back into the franchise? Some sexiness, some mischievousness. You know, some are calling this the best Bond movie ever made, but for me, I felt like I just attended a funeral. It was just very dark.
Yeah, so yes, you've taken the words out of my mouth regarding, you know, the fact that Bond was always a joyful character. You know, he was a cad and he was fun to watch as he kind of, you know, ogled his way through women and flirted. And when I say I really love the movie, I love Daniel Craig as Bond. I do love him as Bond. And I think it's a good movie as a whole, you know, story going experience, a film going experience. But I agree with you, Yazdi. There's no joyfulness. But my other, and you kind of alluded to this, my other criticism of the movie is, and I do have one, this did feel like a throwback to old Bond movies of the 70s and 80s, I felt. But my criticism is that it was a little bit too tongue-in-cheek. We get that, you know, they're trying to have throwbacks to old Bondness. You know, there's an Aston Martin, and there's, you know, shaken not stirred, and there's all of these Bondisms. But it was a little bit too tongue in cheek, and I worry where this character's gonna go.
I didn't get tongue in cheek at all from this movie. I mean, I thought it took itself as seriously as a Bond movie ever has. I mean, yeah, to Yazdi's point, the somber tone. You know, I don't mind that. I didn't find it offensive in Casino Royale, which I think is actually one of the best Bond movies, and that includes some of the Sean Connery classics. I mean, my real problem with the movie was just its overall lack of inventiveness in terms of plot. This wasn't a James Bond movie per se for me. This could have been Jason Bourne as any, you know, kind of an action hero. And the biggest issue for me was there was no adventure. There was, you know, there were these great locations, but there was never any like hardcore pursuit of villainy. You know, most Bond movies have, you know, let's get to the bad guy.
Oh, I disagree.
He kind of just showed up for me here. And then, you know, his overall objective, I thought, in this movie, the Bond, the villain here, again, I didn't really care for it. I mean, he wasn't looking for, you know, world domination or some other diabolical scheme to kind of set off wars. He had one particular objective, and that was good, but he could have achieved that behind his keyboard. And considering what he was able to achieve behind his keyboard, I found it very hard to believe that, you know, his one goal was ultimately as difficult for him to get as it became. That just seemed like a very drawn out idea for me.
I disagree with you, John. I know, yes, you probably want to say, I disagree that there wasn't adventure. I mean, remember, we're in year 50 of a franchise. So what are we going to do with Bond? Because either you're going to go Austin Powers way and make it, you know, groovy and funny, or you're going to go Jason Bourne and be way too serious. So where does Bond fit in with all of this?
See, so that's exactly what I was going to say. I think Jason Bourne has started moving closer towards Bond, and Bond started moving closer towards Jason Bourne. Where now Bond is this very conflicted. You know, one of the people I saw it with said it almost seems like they're too influenced by Christopher Nolan. I mean, this seems like a very...
Not a bad thing.
Well, depends on who you ask. But it just seems so weighted down. And I kind of miss... There was always this kind of sexist, politically incorrect, you know, feeling goofiness about Bond. And I kind of miss that. And I loved, like you, I absolutely love Casino Royale. And I think it might be one of the best Bond movies. I loved it. But it's that whole feeling is kind of overstayed its welcome. It's time for Bond to kind of be, you know, who he is. And I love Daniel Craig tremendously as an actor, but he almost seems, you know, unwilling or incapable of being silly or goofy. And I think that's the problem, is I think as long as we have Daniel Craig, who is very believable, he brings a lot of heft to it, but there can be no joy, because I don't think Craig can do joy while he's playing Bond.
I guess while he's doing all of that exercising, he forgets to exercise the smile muscles.
I think we are in the era of the serious Bond movie, and just like the serious Batman movies, I don't mind that one iota. I don't mind these movies taking themselves seriously, because he's not a comic book character. He's a secret agent. And, you know, the sexiness I kind of get, but I don't yearn for the days of the Roger Moore type Bond movies.
See, I love Roger Moore.
The kind of the octopussy movies. I had fun with them, but don't get me wrong. When you look at them now, they are self-parodying. And to do that in a modern context, I think would just fall over.
Well, then that becomes Austin Powers in a sense, right?
So it would be that. And they would achieve that completely unintentionally by, you know, having him have those, you know, double entendres and, you know, hi, my name's Pussy Galore. Yes, indeed. You know, those kind of jokes don't work for modern audiences.
Yeah. I mean, again, you know, let's not forget we're year 50 of a franchise.
Yeah, I mean, I see that point, but it almost seems to me that this movie is too tame. I mean, it seemed like it was playing it too safe. It was playing it too safe with the sexiness. It was playing it too safe with the action. To me, it wasn't violent enough. It wasn't silly enough. It wasn't
enough.
There wasn't enough skin. I wanted more skin. I wanted some more of a beating heart underneath it. It just seemed, you know. But
I wanted espionage.
Right.
There was espionage.
And they completely threw away the whole idea of exploding pens and kind of silly Bond gadgets. I mean, I want that stuff, you know. I want acid to come out of, you know, a cell phone somewhere. I mean, you know, this Bond has no gadgets.
He had some.
He had a radio. I mean, and that's not a spoiler, but he's not.
And a cool gun.
Yeah, but I want, like, you know, secret microphones in his ear. And I want, like, you know, microscopic cameras in a lapel pin. You know, I want that kind of stuff in a James Bond movie, because that's the thing I used to love about James Bond. He always had really cool gadgets.
Yeah, he did. But something you said about Javier Bardem, Joe, I mean, I think he was a great baddie, but again, I just felt he was more of a caricature baddie than a real baddie that fit in this realm of James Bond. I mean, I really enjoyed watching him, and I think he did a great job. But he was more of a baddie that fit into Austin Powers than a Bond, you know, Jason Bourne-esque type arena.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I thought Javier Bardem was great. It was a very inspired choice to play him. And, you know, when you put, you know, somehow when you put Javier Bardem with a bad haircut, it kind of frees him, you know.
Yeah.
You know, he just goes over the top, and he really goes over the top. And I like the very first scene when he's introduced. This whole interaction with Bond is really queasy. And it's kind of fun. I mean, I really enjoyed that part. But I agree, he was almost like out of a different movie. I also had a problem, and I don't know how much of a spoiler this is, but I also had a problem with the very last act of the movie, you know, where... You know, this it almost seemed like from another genre. I mean, Bond does not hunker down in a remote location waiting for the bad guy to show up. He never plays defense. I mean, Bond always plays offense. And
that's
it just
a great
seemed
point.
You know, it just seemed weird. And you know, we've seen this before done like 20 years ago with Witness, which was this Harrison Ford movie.
Yeah.
The end reminded me of that. As well as Haywire, which was the Steven Soderbergh movie last year, had a very similar ending. So As much as I enjoyed it, it's you know, it's very entertaining and it's very well made. You know, the end kind of...
But I guess
just to speak to that, I mean, I agree with you 100%. And I think when I was talking about, you know, action and adventure, you know, there is no adventure in a hunker down type bunker scenario. Right, you know, this is people holed up, you know, trying to survive the onslaught of multiple bad guys. Well, you know, that's a great battle movie, but it's not what I come to see in a James Bond film.
But I liked it because it was showing Bond as resourceful. I mean, you know,
he's not MacGyver, he's James Bond.
I know, but you know, he was resourceful.
I don't want him to be jerry-rigging traps from, you know, the stuff around him. I want him to have, like, the latest stuff from Q that completely catches us off guard when, you know I want the ejector seat that, you know, that...
Which they allude to,
but... The key thing for me in James Bond and gadgets is that they introduce them and then you can't wait for them to be used. You're like, I can't wait for the acid in the pen to be squirted into the eyes of the monster villain. You know, didn't get that. And the hunkering down stuff with
I did talking about Q, though. I did love Q.
Exactly.
I thought this Q was brilliant.
Exactly.
Really liked him.
Yeah.
And of course, he was just in Cloud Atlas.
And I don't know if we're giving too much away here, but this movie does in many ways represent a change of guard for a lot of the characters in the Bond franchise. And I like the new characters. I like Naomi Harris' character, and I really like the new Q. I mean, this Ban Vishaw, this little geek kid with this big mop of head and this, you know, super, super nerd. It was kind of fun. I enjoyed that part. The other part I really liked about the movie was the cinematography by Roger Deakins. I mean,
it was beautifully shot.
Beautiful. I mean, there are some scenes shot, especially in the nighttime in Shanghai and in Macau.
Yes.
And the Shanghai ones has this whole neon urban thing, which they take that and make it almost something we've never seen before.
Yeah.
The whole lighting, it was very ingenious and it's beautiful to look at. So really good visuals there.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you guys didn't think that when he's coming into Macau, that was such a throwback to like a Roger Moore coming into somewhere?
I saw that. I mean, there were elements of that. And
I think
he was paying, you know,
homage.
Yeah. He was definitely paying respect to the Bond movies of the past. I mean, Sam Mendes clearly cares about this franchise, but I think he's done a reboot of a reboot. I mean, the whole Daniel Craig Bond theme, as Yazdi said, introduced this new darker, more real Bond, and Mendes is taking it a step further. He's saying, you know, this is where I want the franchise to go, and it may be more true to the original the original novels by Ian Fleming, because I think we did go in this very campy direction for a while with Bond, but he's really trying to ground the whole character, and you know, I think we might see more of a Jason Bourne type thing, which is really the thing that scares me more than anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing with Sam Mendes is in every movie he's made, he has this very particular clinical, detached, cold sensibility, be it American Beauty or Away We Go or even Road to Perdition or Revolutionary Road. He kind of watches his characters from a distance, mm-hmm. and he's often very judgmental of his characters. And here again, there's some degree of condescension on the part of Bond. I mean, he's clearly so much... He seems to project that he's so much superior to everybody else, even though he's, you know, not being able to keep up physically. You know, he's getting older. So I think part of the issue is also that some of this, the sensibility of the movie might come from this particular director. And I think the movie also can't decide if it wants to be an action movie or this really somber character study of, you know, Bond and where he grew up. And so I sensed a little bit of a struggle there as well. And
I mean, I definitely got the sense of reboot, which was interesting that we're, you know, it's a reboot and we're only three films in. I don't know if this is a spoiler, but watching it a second time, I realized the entire movie is in the opening credits, which is very interesting.
Oh, I didn't see that at all.
Okay. Oh, in the graphic sequence?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, really?
They've done that a lot.
They've done that a lot in Bond movies. And again, that's what I kind of thought, oh, this is an interesting throwback to old Bond movies. But okay, let's wind this one up then. So, Joe, why don't you go first?
So this is a good James Bond movie. It's just not a great one. I think overall for me, you know, I wanted some of the plot twists that we saw in Casino Royale, because that for me made that movie. I think that movie had many, many layers to it. And just when you think it was all done, you had these new elements thrown in. This was a much more traditional linear narrative, which for me, I think with expectations of Mendes behind the helm and all of the wonderful reviews this movie has been getting, was a little bit of a letdown. So I'm going to give this a 7 out of 10. It's a solid movie. It's, if you like the franchise, you'll certainly enjoy this movie. And anyone else, you'll get a good action flick.
Yazdi.
I have nothing more to say to what Joe just said. It's a very well-made movie. It's a worthy entry. I had a problem with the tone. It's by no means, I think, the best Bond movie ever made. I want them to do get a little bit more playful in future movies, but be as it may, I give it 7 out of 10.
Interesting. So I think this is worth seeing just so you can forget about Quantum of Solace, which was so bad. And for those of us so inclined, Daniel Craig looks so good in a tux. I also give this one a 7 out of 10.
Okay.
Solid sevens.
Interesting, because the whole world seems to be on fire.
Yeah.
I haven't seen a Bond movie. Well, I guess Casino Royale did, but 94% is pretty high for a franchise this old.
See, but I truly believe, and this is what I walked in there with, I was thinking, oh my God, I hope this isn't as bad as Quantum of Solace. And I almost think that the high scores are a reflection of people being so relieved that it was better than Quantum of Solace, because that was such a disappointment. So I don't know if people are grading it in comparison relative to Quantum of Solace or judging it in its own right. I don't know.
I think part of the issue also is Bond has a built-in franchise.
Absolutely.
I mean, people are going to go and they're going to take their kids along, and these are all PG now. They don't even try to make it, relatively... edgy.
Hence the lack of skin.
But so I think, I think it's almost impossible for a Bond movie to be a commercial dud. It'll almost always make some money during the first couple of weekends because people will go to see it regardless.
Yeah. Yeah.
But this one did make more money than any other Bond movie apparently in its opening weekend. So.
Wow.
Wow.
I just hope Nolan gets a franchise. Come on, Chris.
No.
then we'll have Christian Bale as Bond.
Okay.
I think Tarantino should do the next Bond.
I think Tarantino should do the next Bond.
And he's said so
that
many times he's
cool.
wanted to do it. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, I would love that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Interesting. Well, let's move on to our next movie. So we go from Skyfall into Flight, which Flight, I think, could also be called Skyfall, because if you've seen the trailers, this one is about a plane crash. But so, I mean, basically speaking, Flight is the new movie by Robert Zemeckis of Back to the Future and many other movies fame. It stars Denzel Washington, and it's essentially about an alcoholic pilot who is involved in an air accident. He saves the day and saves many lives, but it does turn out that he was involved in some substance use ahead of the crash. And so the movie is really an exploration of those kind of themes. The movie stars Denzel Washington. He's really the main lead, but we have a good performance in here. Well, good cameo here by John Goodman. We have Don Cheadle in this movie. And I forget the name of the lead, the romantic lead. Rashmi, did you have a note of her?
Kelly Riley.
So this is a movie that came with high expectations as well. The review, the blogosphere, the whole movie critics seemed to love this one. So Yazdi, I don't think you got to see this yet, did you?
Missed the screening. Want to see it though.
Okay. But Rashmi and I did. So Rashmi, what do you think of Flight?
So like you said, Joe, this should be a really good film. The premise is excellent, right? A plane goes down, an excellent pilot lands the plane as best as he can, but he was drunk when he did it. It wasn't a good film. This is highly overacted. This is highly overacted and left me feeling yucky. I have no other way to describe it.
Joe?
Simply stated, I thought this movie was brilliant.
Oh my God.
I know. It has some issues. And ultimately, I think those issues are kind of forgivable, because really, this is one of the standard movie tropes. It's a redemption story. Mm-hmm. It's about a guy with a problem, and his journey is to overcome alcoholism and substance abuse. So when you set the movie up that way, it doesn't take a genius to think about where it's going to go ultimately. And it's very predictable in that regard. But the movie is saved from the dregs of movie
hell,
right? Simply by two things. One, Zemeckis directs the life out of this movie. The crash sequence in this movie is one of the most visceral, heart-pounding, frightening, edge-of-the-seat sequences that I've seen in a long time. And I mean, I haven't been this frightened in a movie, since maybe like The Hurt Locker. That sense of being there, that sense of something horrible is going to happen here. That whole crash sequence, amazing. The rest of the movie is carried by Denzel Washington's mesmerizing performance. He really becomes his character for me, and despite all of the things that this character does, some of which are incredibly annoying. They're like, you know, why would anyone, you know, yes, we know he has a drug problem. Yes, you know, he drinks a lot. But there are things that he does and says which are just beyond comprehension. But they're believable simply because Denzel carries this. It's a very flawed script and character, but it works. It works so well.
I'm sort of over Denzel Washington.
Me too.
I want to see this movie just to see what all the hype's about. And he, you know, people have said he has an assured nomination for Best Actor, so I do want to check it out. Rashmi?
I mean, no, look, listen, I will agree with Joe. The best part of this movie is the first half hour when the plane goes down. But if you have anxiety, like I'm sure many people in the audience do, and especially me, then you end up feeling not so good about the whole thing. But let's not forget you're there to watch a crash movie. But for me, the main problem I had is that the film just didn't have enough depth. So I didn't feel like the main protagonist had an interesting enough journey, and I didn't care ultimately what happened to him. So yes, he's an alcoholic, but we didn't understand why he became one, what his troubles were, his family play a peripheral role. It just didn't work for me, and he just overacted the entire thing. Denzel was so Denzel. This is the same Denzel we've seen in every other movie.
Everything you've said there is true. I mean, I don't disagree with many of those points, but I think the difference between the way that you and I viewed the movie is I bought the performance, you thought it was a case of overacting. And yeah. I can see why you would think it's overacting, because, you know, these are those kind of, you know, big, you know, stand-up speech type moments. All throughout the movie, there are behaviors that are quite clearly exaggerated for dramatic effect. I think some of that's in the writing rather than in the performance, because, again, I think some of the behaviors of the character are... Yeah, he's doing what was on the page.
Yeah.
But I think he's doing it with such conviction, and it's quite a nuanced role, because this guy is inherently unlikable. And yet I found myself rooting for him from start to finish.
Yeah.
And I think that to me was in the performance as opposed to in the script or the screenplay. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, I bought it, and so it carried me through.
Yeah. The other problem I had with it was I didn't understand the subplot with this Kelly Riley person. So there's a character called Nicole. It just didn't make sense to me. I know she's there to be somewhat of a love interest for him, but that whole story was so full of holes, I couldn't even convince myself to go along with it.
Again, you know, standard movie stuff. He needs a romantic interest, and so they introduce one, and so, you know, we have a story that follows. So I agree, the setup there was a little weak. You know, it was hard that they bonded in the way that they did, and as hard as they did, and a lot of coincidence in there. So coincidence is always one of those things that always makes you go, don't like that. But again, didn't bother me.
It was silly.
I mean, I like the central conceit of the movie, which is that there's a burden to be carried if you're a hero,
right?
And, you know, and then what if? I mean, every person is inherently flawed. You're human, and you know what if you find out some stuff that you don't want to know about somebody who you hold in high esteem or who you consider as a hero? I mean, I was reading the newspaper this morning about General Petraeus, who resigned because of an extramarital affair. I mean, what do we expect from our heroes? I mean, everybody has failings, and, you know, why do we expect so much? So
I don't believe a word of that, by the way. There's more to it. But
that's a whole different podcast. Right. I was going to say, yeah. Right.
It's not This Week in Politics.
Yeah. But so I'm fascinated by the whole concept in terms of how much we expect from our heroes to be, how perfect and clean and so forth.
Yeah. But I think that heart didn't come through. And I think that would be a very good angle if that had been carried through. Okay, my final gripe, and this is probably my biggest one. Why all the nudity at the start? We don't need it. And I certainly don't want to see that sort of landing strip. It didn't progress the story, and it just seemed cheap to me.
Two podcasts in a row, Rashmi gets landing strip in there.
Back to back.
Again, I'm going to be in agreement with you. This is a hard R-rated movie. Mm. There is drug use, nudity, and language all throughout, none of which I thought was necessary for the plot. But that said, it was there, and it gave the movie a certain tone. And that scene at the beginning really set me up for what I was watching, because, you know, all of a sudden I was like, you know, you see the trailers and you think, you know, pilot, captain, this is going to be kind of a noble story. And no, this is a flawed character. He has many vices, and he indulges all of them. So that the opening scene, with as graphic as it was, totally set me up for what I was going to watch. I instantly knew who this guy was, and I instantly didn't like him, and I instantly kind of went on his journey with him because I, you know, I knew him so well.
But it piqued Yazdi's interest.
I know.
Yeah.
I popped up.
You really did.
And you should go see the movie just for that.
Okay, are you winding up now? Because I think it's that time.
Yeah. Just one observation here. I was a big fan of the movie The Wrestler. Mm-hmm. It's a similar kind of story about a character that has, many flaws and goes on this journey. And maybe that's kind of a telling thing. Because Rashmi, I know you didn't like that movie
much.
Yazdi, I can't remember if you liked it or not.
I loved it, yes.
So for me, it was... It's not the same movie, but it is that same kind of movie trope of, you know, the alcoholic person has to face his demons. And ultimately, I think that...
And you loved that one with Jeff Bridges, not... Was it?
Yeah,
Jeff Bridges.
The country singer.
Oh, gosh,
what was the movie called?
He won the Oscar for it.
Yeah. Yes.
I know. I want to say Country Strong, but...
No. Was it? Oh, please, that was Gwyneth.
That was...
No, it was... It didn't even have country in it. It's okay.
It's okay. We'll remember it. We'll put it in the show notes. So overall, I thought this was a very good movie. And I want to give it a 9 out of 10 because when I walked out of the theater, I felt, wow, this was amazing. It's gone down a little in my esteem since then. So I'm actually going to give a final score of 8 out of 10. But, it's just so well made, put together and acted for me that I think there, you know, Oscars... Well, if he was nominated, it wouldn't surprise me. If he won, it would. So, Rashmi.
Okay. This film was all too dispensable and crashes and burns for me. This is a flight I recommend you give a miss. And certainly don't watch this on the back of an aeroplane if you have anxiety like me. I'm going to give this one a 4 out of 10.
Wow.
That landing strip took a whole point off.
It used to be
What's
fun.
The offensive? Why are you so offended by
Why
that?
Do we have to see that in a movie?
Why not?
I don't want to see anyone snatch.
Why not? Anyway.
That's a whole different genre.
It's not used in the movie. It's just seen.
Exactly.
I hope it's not used.
Are you expecting someone to blow their nose on it?
I mean... I think it very well set the tone of the movie. And the reason that it's there in the opening sequence, if it was a random thing right in the middle of the movie, it's
7 minutes of snatch.
No, it wasn't 7 minutes of snatch.
It felt like that.
It was a glimpse here and there.
Joe.
Oh, no, I would know.
Yassi, you need to go and you need to watch and count the number of minutes.
I'm going
to
take a timer.
If you're looking at your stopwatch instead of the screen, Yassi, there's something completely wrong with you.
All right, let's move on to more pleasant things. How many bananas, Yazdi?
6 bananas.
6 bananas. I think it will be more bananas when you actually see them.
Okay.
Okay. Yazdi's random banana score for films he doesn't watch.
That I haven't seen yet.
All right, well, let's move on to our final movie of the week, and that is A Late Quartet.
And I do have the intro for this one.
Go ahead.
When the beloved cellist of a world-renowned string quartet receives a life-changing diagnosis, the group's future suddenly hangs in the balance. Suppressed emotions, competing egos, and uncontrollable passions threaten to derail years of friendship and collaboration. As they're about to play their 25th anniversary concert, quite possibly their last, only their intimate bond and power of music can preserve their legacy. Inspired by and structured around Beethoven's Opus 131, String Quartet in C-sharp minor, A Late Quartet pays homage to chamber music and the cultural world of New York. This is directed by Yaron Zilberman, written by Seth Grossman and Yaron Zilberman, and it stars Christopher Walken, Philip Seymour Hoffman, Catherine Keener, Mardo Jaffrey, Mike Ivanir, and Imogen Poots. And I'm sad to say, yes, you're the only one that saw this. I really did want to see this.
Although for the cast alone, I want to see
this. So I'm dying to hear your review.
Yeah, I mean, this was a movie that, you know, I sank into this with gratitude and enjoyed every minute of it. And it kind of has the feel of some of the more emotionally resonant films from the late 70s, like Kramer versus Kramer or An Unmarried Woman, you know, films that were basically character-driven above all else. Mm. And even as you saw, you know, the gears in the script moving a little too visibly, the stellar acting made it all completely worthwhile. And as a viewer, you had no choice to be completely and deeply involved with what was happening on screen. And just like those films, The Late Quartet is also a quintessentially New York film. I mean, there are a few films which have, I think, captured the feeling and that sensibility of New York, you know, the sensibility of very accomplished and, you know, very intelligent individuals who are trying to understand all the undecipherables of human behavior. So this sounds all very high and lofty, but at its core, it's really about these four characters.
Yeah.
And it's about these four characters who have learned to live together over a long period of time because they're part of this world-renowned quartet. And by definition, they have these deep underlying relationships and underlying grievances and underlying resentments. And all it takes is for one of them, you know, to announce that, you know, he's not going to be part of the quartet anymore. And that whole very delicate dynamic between the four of them completely unravels.
Yeah, for me, I just thought, what a genius idea to use the metaphor of a quartet of music where you have to have each player playing their part as a story about relationships. It seems genius to me. And does that follow through?
It does. And I think to its great credit, the movie never tries to make any of the characters very likable.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, every character remains true to their form, but they're all very flawed and they're all very frail and they make horrible decisions and they say horrible things. And I think if there is a flaw to the movie, the only flaw to it is that sometimes the plot gets a little too heavy with contrivance.
Mm.
But, you know, these are such fine, seasoned actors.
Yeah.
That they just take it all the way. I think this is the kind of movie which will bother some people, you know, who want more fireworks out of the movie. In many ways, it's a relationship movie. It's about, you know, A, saying something to B, and B, getting angry and doing something to C. And I enjoy this kind of movies, which is about acting, which is about good writing.
Is it slow? Because the whole tone looks to me like kind of a slow movie. And for me, it doesn't appeal from the trailer. I mean, I get what you're saying. I would see it for the actors alone, but the movie itself isn't one that kind of screams for me to go see it.
It's not, I wouldn't say it's slow at all. I don't even think it's particularly talky, but I think it is about these four characters and it's about how they interact with each other. And I think there are enough emotional ups and downs in terms of, you know, some pretty major revelations and major things happening, which defines the relationships, that I found it very compelling. And, you know, Catherine Keener in particular, I mean, she's one of the great unsung American actors here.
Yeah.
And she has a very difficult role. She plays somebody who's not necessarily likable. She's warm and she's giving, but she's closed off and somehow unknowable even to her husband. And this kind of stuff is very difficult to play. And it's precisely because of her complexities that she seems so human. And Philip Seymour Hoffman is at the other end of it. I mean, you know, he's been in one great movie after the other. And
he's had a great year.
He's had a great year. And, you know, he plays this character who is the opposite of her, who is all too human. He's jealous and he's incitable and he's, you know, makes bad decisions. And so these all of these characters are so fascinating because they're so real.
Yeah.
And I think the real big surprise here for me was, you know, Christopher Walken. And Christopher Walken, I mean, what has he left to do that'll surprise us? I mean, he's always been larger than life in every single movie that he is. Well, be prepared. He plays someone we've never seen him play before. He plays this gentle, kind, soft-hearted, easily bruised kind of character, which is so not Christopher Walken.
Mm.
And, you know, great actors, I mean, they manage it. I mean, he completely nails it. So, you know, I was just fascinated by the level of acting here.
Yes. How believable was the playing? Because, you know, I guess that they're a string quartet and these four people are trying to convince us they're a string quartet. How believable was all of that?
So that's the other thing I wanted to mention. This is a first-time director, Yaron Zilberman. This is a first-time director. And I must say he must have a musical background because there is absolutely no gimmicks here. There are no shots of, you know, camera from too far. These are people who are playing their instruments. There are close-ups, there are extended periods where they're playing, they're pressing the right keys, they're pushing the right, you know, they're I mean, I don't know if they're inherently good musicians or have had any musical training, but it looked really believable. to the extent that in the last act of the movie, a true professional musician plays with them together, and it seemed real to me. So I think I'm sure they did a lot of homework in terms of seeming genuine.
And then my final question is, any Oscar nods here?
I think this might be too small a film. It's a shame, really. I mean, I'm a little disappointed with how the film's been even released. I think this kind of movie should have had more fanfare. It should have had more. It should be celebrated a little bit more. But if it were up to me, I would think all three of them. Actually, even the fourth character, you know, they all put in exceptional performances. This Mark Ivanir, who I've never heard of before, although he's been in many movies before, he just fills this role like a glove. And then there's a fifth character played by Imogen Poots, who, you know, is steadily building a really good resume. Yeah. And she, again, has a very, very difficult role. I mean, she's funny and immature and stubborn and reckless and generous and beautiful. You know, essentially everything that you expect a very young person to be. And she completely nails it. So I think this, more than anything else, is just a showcase for some amazing acting. And the script is brilliant as well. So, yeah. I mean, this is my kind of movie.
So like sum up and give us a score.
So I think this might be a hidden gem. I think if you like good cinema, if you like good acting, if you like a good script, and if you don't mind a little bit of contrivance, go see this movie. You will be happy for it. You know, this is the kind of movies I really like. I give it an 8 out of 10.
Wow. Easily. I'm so sad I missed this one. I'm going to go out and see this.
Yeah. Catch it while we can, because it's probably not going to be around for long. I agree with you. The marketing has not been very good for this movie, and even the trailer I think is a little too gentle in its presentation, so there was nothing that I felt compelled me to go see this. Now that you've spoken about it, I feel a little differently. So okay, so let us know what you think. Mail at moviewallahs.com, twitter.com/moviewallahs, facebook.com/moviewallahs as well. Do visit our main website when you can, and don't forget, if you're a geek, you can check out our iPhone and Android apps, both of which are free on the relevant app stores. Until our next episode, it's going to be too many movies, too little time. A goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.